Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/spoken today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
The Real Housewives is a guilty pleasure for most. But if you're looking to not feel guilty about that pleasure, tune in to Everything Iconic with me, Danny Pellegrino, where I break down all the messy moments and behind-the-scenes antics of Bravo's popular franchise. And on Everything Iconic, I also interview celebrity guests like Kelly Ripa, Keke Palmer, Drew Barrymore, Cameron Diaz, and more about their guilty pleasures, their past work, and so much more. So if you're pop culture obsessed and find yourself watching way too much reality TV like me, tune in to Everything Iconic with Danny Pellegrino, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Eric Shapiro. David North Martino. John Copenhaver. And Al Warren.
Heard on
FM Los Angeles, 102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren. Mr. Dave Martino is back again.
Again.
We're still. So we've got Mr. M.B. Mooney.
Yes, sir.
So what brings you to the writing world? What sane person would do that?
You're not a sane person. I have decided that writing is something I have to do. As I explained to you guys a little bit before, you hit record, that, I do some mentoring and kind of inspiration, encouragement to some other writers and creatives about the creative process. And I've come to the point where I realize there are a couple different types of creatives. There are some people who have to do it. There's some people who have to write, or who have to paint, or they just have to do it. And there are other people where they want to do it. They think it would be fun to do it, but they don't necessarily have to. And I'm more of the have to kind. I'm more of the type that I got addicted to writing at a very young age, and the love of story and the love of that whole process. And I never stopped, whether it was writing songs, whether it was writing, articles, or obviously fiction was all throughout. So yeah, so for me, it's something I have to do it. And so that it makes me a little crazy. It does make me a little crazy, because my wife asks me sometimes, she looks at me and she'll say, "Are you in book world?" Because if I'm in the middle of writing a book, a lot of times I can be at dinner, or we can be out somewhere, and I'll space out because I'm, thinking about how to kill a dragon that day or something. I'm just, my mind's always going with that stuff. So it's a little crazy.
Well, you must do something, right? I mean, you got a wife, I think, right? I mean, or is that imaginary?
No. I do have imaginary friends, and I write about them for sure. But no, she's real.
Thank God. How do you know?
Well, that is an existential question.
I mean,
there's a history of philosophy behind questions like that. No, I know, because I can't end her story. And she's not someone I can, she's a free agent in my life, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, but maybe she's writing the story and she can end yours.
Right, yeah.
Maybe you're a player.
I didn't think about that. You're a
player in the story. You're not really.
Well, a good wife does know how to get her husband to do things that he may not have known he was going to do, right?
Right.
That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Dave's wife has a whip.
Yes. So.
But that's a different story. That's for the fun things.
That's a different podcast.
Yeah. Well, not really.
Not really. Oh, no. Okay.
We've done that too. So listen, but your characters, how are you relating with your characters. Then you say you've got characters that you hear and stuff. So do you hear them, see them, feel them? Is it like watching a movie? Is it like Friends? Is it, what's your experience when you're dealing with your characters?
Yes, so when I write, I definitely have a plan. I do some brainstorming ahead of time. And usually by the time I write, a lot of the brainstorming work is characters. And especially early on, I didn't do some of that work. So, you know, and you've probably heard this a lot of times if you talk to writers, a lot of my characters were just based on real people that I knew.
Oh, yeah.
If that makes sense. They had little adjustments that so that people, you know, I don't even know if I thought about not to sue me, but, you know, just probably couldn't sue me. I changed the names. I changed some things. But the essence of different characters were based on, you know, people I knew. And then, of course, you know, you get more into the writing and there are definitely times when I'm writing that my characters do things and I don't know why they did it. And so I'm in the middle of writing. So even though I may have like a general arc of the story, sometimes the characters act out. And there's been several times when a couple of books, I've tried to kill a character and they won't die. They just won't die. I don't know why. They survive whatever I throw at them.
You got to get your wife's permission there because she's the big writer here, right?
I do.
Right.
She didn't sign off on it. I didn't get her permission. So for me, it's not like a full imaginary friend, but there's definitely that element of it, that if the character is real to at least some degree to me, then that reflects for the reader. The reader, they seem real to them. And so people do comment on that when they read my books and I jump into the story. They're like, your characters are already sort of fully formed in their, how they talk, how they act, their motivations, all of that stuff. We can see them right away. And so, but that's a lot of the brainstorming that I do ahead of time. I've learned, you know, like I'm going to start writing the second book in this series, Element Book 2, soon. And I'm almost to that point where I know the heart of the story. There's certain elements that I have to feel like, okay, I know the heart of the story. I know the characters. I know what they're after. And now I can put them in situations and they react to one another. And then I'm just describing the interaction, if that makes sense. But I kind of have to know these characters. And then when I throw them into a situation, it happens. You know, then they react and act and interact.
Wished I had a brainstorm.
Well, do your characters ever surprise you so much that they basically, you know, take the plot right off the rails and make it difficult for you to get back to where you want to go?
Like I said, there was one, and this was a earlier book that I wrote. It was more in the kind of the urban fantasy horror sort of genre, and it was, you know, immortals and all that sort of stuff. And yes, like I said, this was the character that my plan for the story was for him to die at the end. Like, that was my plan, and he lived. And it was one of those things where I was like, okay, what am I going to do? Like, that wasn't part of my plan for the next book. You know, he was going to be, like, there's a whole story for the next book where he was dead, you know. And so, yes, that's happened. It's more been they do something and I don't really know why they did it. Like, there was a character in one of my fantasy books and she reacted when somebody, she reacted very emotionally when somebody when somebody got injured, and I was like, why did that happen? Why did she do that? And it took me a while to figure it out. Like, I had to actually think about it. I had to think about who she was and why it felt real to me that she would react like that. She didn't really take it off the rails. It was just a moment of the story that I wasn't expecting to happen. And it sounds weird. But when I finish a book, I've also noticed this, I have book grief. And I didn't realize what was happening, but I get a little depressed after I finished writing a book. And I realize, like, I'm not with these people anymore. I'm not spending hours a day with these people. And I miss them. That's weird. It's weird. I told you it's crazy.
Yeah, you miss these imaginary friends of yours. And you don't drive, too, do you?
I don't drive.
Like, they don't give you a license for this kind of
Well, they have. That's not one of the questions they ask, you know, when you
well, let's
when
see.
You go back.
I'm going to report you.
Oh, you're gonna
now you're on a list.
Yeah, yeah, I was about to say, are you going to put me on David's list?
Yeah, you're going to be right up there. You know, don't let this man have a license.
Maybe I can get off one of these lists.
Yeah.
Maybe I can bump you off. Yeah, I can bump you off.
Who's crazier? Listen, so when you're dealing with these, you said that a lot of these characters have, let's say they've come from or been inspired from people that you know or have met. You know, that sort of thing. So who have you killed?
Ooh, good question.
And we want names and phone numbers. We'll get them on the other line.
Names and phone numbers.
And we'll talk to them.
Well, I did have I had a mentor through my 20s, early 30s, and he passed away. So I had that sort of Obi-Wan Kenobi sort of moment, right? So I did have a character based on him in some ways in one of my fantasy novels, and he did die. And so as far as, you know, it wasn't like he was a living person, but that was someone that, because it was sort of true to life in that sort of experience. I'm trying to think if there have been other people that I've killed. There probably have been. I don't know. I don't know if I'm as conscious about trying to get my revenge like that. As much as other people, maybe some of the villains are based on, because I was a history major first. That was one of my first jobs. So I was a history teacher. So, you know, maybe some historical characters, you know, that were based on certain villainous people, you know, in Roman or, you know, medieval history or something like that.
Right. Right. Well, that's, you know, I just wanted to see if there was anybody you were knocking off there. But, but you know, when you get into the evil, there's also a lot of violence, let's say, and aggression and stuff. Do you moderate how you write that? Do you think about it? Are you conscious of it? Are you thinking about the reader when you write the more dark stuff?
That's a great question. So when I was writing one of my fantasy novels, the first kind of major fantasy novel that I have, then I was trying to kind of pull back on some of the violence a little bit, just because I was like, ooh, I don't want to, you know, like you said, I was thinking about the reader. And I read a book by, he's like an agent, literary agent called Donald Moss. And I've actually met him since then. And it was just called 20th Century Fiction. And, you know, I like to read about, you know, writing and the writing process and different elements of that and try to educate myself. And he said something in that book that just really hit home with me. He said, write what scares you. Write the thing that you don't think you should write, but it kind of scares you. Like, challenge yourself. Or not in a challenging, like, overcome a mountain sort of thing, but challenge, like, if it scares you, there's a reason why you don't want to deal with it sort of thing. And that might be good, though, for you to deal with it. Like, that might actually be good for the reader in this way. That might interest them. So I just decided I was going to make it as dark as I wanted to. Now, it's not as dark as, you know, some books that I've read, but for this one that is more geared toward the young adult, you know, new adult sort of audience, I did pull back some of the violence that, you know, some of the darkness, but not all of it. I mean, there's still those elements of, you know, you definitely could see some of the darkness of within it, just not quite as intense or graphic, you know.
Some of the darkness in your life, you know. So for this old guy here, this ancient man here, how would you describe what young adult, new adult, fantasy, urban fantasy, science fiction, all of those categories? You see, because when I was a young boy, it was all just science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
all these definitions and stuff. So how would you describe your writing? Like, what's different? How do you distinguish? How would you describe it to someone like me? I'm an old guy, so I'm going, well, isn't it science fiction? And you would say no, and you would say why. So what's the difference?
That's a good question. And science fiction generally has some level of futuristic technology as a part of it. And it could be in the future. It doesn't have to be in the future, but has some element of forward-thinking technology to it. But when you get into fantasy, it's similar, but generally the quote unquote technology piece of that is some level of magic, some type of supernatural or magic system. Now you can have science fiction fantasy like Star Wars that has both, right? That has those sort of technology, but also has some of those mystical elements of the Force and stuff like that. And then, you know, because when you get into YA, that's young adult, that's high school, generally, high school age, or whatever they call it in Canada, secondary school or something. And then new adult, you get into college age, early 20s. And that's because they started to kind of come up with a little bit of a new, you know, category for people who were in college but weren't quite... still like stories about young people, but not quite teenagers. So they're, you know, stories more geared towards them. But, you know, of course, a lot of people who are in high school like to read about, you know, people in their 20s. It's sort of like to read. People like to read, especially when you're young, you like to read up a little bit as far as people who are a little older than you. So, yeah, so that's where a lot of those terms come from, you know.
But what how does someone like yourself, I mean, you're not as ancient as me, but you're older now. So how do you stay up to date on what interests someone, let's say that's 16 or maybe even 20, like someone, you know, in that little young adult age group, and, you know, what's cool with them and what's going on? Are you hanging out on TikTok or what? How do you?
I do hang out on TikTok, and I think we followed each other on TikTok, and I do hang out on TikTok. So I do know some of that. I also have three teenagers. I have an 18, my son is 18, my daughters are 16 and 14. And so, you know, we talk about things and they watch, you know, we watch shows together and they tell me what they like and we talk about, I have skewed my kids not for all movies, but as far as writing wise, just because they will watch a movie and we'll talk about writing what happened in the story, you know. Like it was kind of like when I learned about, you know, early on, and the kids were young, and I was learning about the Dark Night of the Soul moment in a lot of movies when everything looks impossible and hopeless. There's this moment in a movie, and it's usually about 2/3 of the way through, maybe 70%, but it's right before the end. There is a Dark Night of the Soul moment where everything looks hopeless. And so when my kids were little, I would stop the movie at that point and say, all right, that's it. It's all done. It's hopeless. And my kids would freak out. They're like, no, Dad, there's like 20 minutes left. There's like 15 minutes left. It's not over. And I use that to show them, like, just because something might look hopeless in the moment, the story's not over. And that's what great stories do. That's what they can teach us is, you know, when whoever the main character is looks like all is lost, it's not all lost. There's another chance. There's another, if they keep going and they're creative about their problem solving or whatever the situation is, you know, they discover more about themselves when they continue forward. For their goal or motivation, whatever it might be. All that to say is I have kids and I talk about story with my kids and I talk about, well, you know, my writing, and they've read some of it and they like some of it better than others for sure. but also, like you said, I hang out on TikTok and I also try to keep up with what's selling and what publishers are kind of looking for. So a couple times a year I'll go, you know, and Google what are the top 10 fantasy books for, you know, the year, or what's kind of hitting right now. And I try to, you know, read a couple of the top books, just to, you know, make sure I'm staying current about, you know, what's being published and what's selling, those sort of things.
As I understand it too, in like your new book, and in a typical book like this, there's a different world, it's a different kingdom. Do you create your own world first before you have the thing that happens, you know, the story and stuff, or is the world come along after?
That's a great question. I have to write it. I have to imagine it. I have to build out the world first. I have to do the world building to a you know, 80% maybe, because you're never going to do it all. You're never going to create everything. You know, you're always going to come up with new stuff along the way and have fun with it and be creative. But I definitely do a great deal of it before I even start the story. If it's a fantasy like this, like you're saying, if it's a kingdom that I've imagined in my brain. When I did my first fantasy novel that this is the same world in, although it's a new series, so people can start with this book, and I kind of wrote it for that because it's my first YA too. But I spent probably 3 or 4 years, not continuously, but I probably spent 3 or 4 years on the world building, because I was a social studies major and a, you know, history major, so there were a lot of elements that I wanted to make sure I had in place. Because when you write a story and it happens in Atlanta, where, you know, I live around the Atlanta area, and it happens in Atlanta, I know that place. And I can say, oh, you go down and turn. And it feels real because it's real to me. And so just like with my characters, I want to make sure I have a good enough handle on the place first. And then, you know, along the way, you can come up with the name of a tavern, or you can come up with different names and different interesting details along the way. But you got, for me personally, and there are pantsers, there are people who just make it up as they go. But for me, it has to feel real to me right away. And I have to do some of that building ahead of time.
Well, do you draw from different mythologies in your epic fantasies, or do you take literary license, or, you know, does most of this just come from your imagination?
I definitely pull from different cultures and different mythologies. I do all of that, especially when I was doing the world building. So when I taught, one of the things that I taught middle school and then high school, one of the things I taught was world history, world cultures. So, and I have traveled, you know, my wife and I lived in South Korea for 4 years. We were teachers at an international school. And, you know, my wife lived in Germany as an exchange student when she was in high school. And so just traveling to different countries, traveling to different places, learning about different cultures is so fascinating to me. And so I pull a lot of that in. And that's one of the things that came that kind of motivated me to write this book and kind of get out of the main series, is that I wanted to explore some different cultural themes and ideas and go to a different part of the world that I hadn't been to before in the main story that I was telling. I wanted to kind of go back and deal with some, let's just say, maybe some not that I only had that, but really delve more into some of the other sort of cultural elements that I had put into the world, and explore some of that with this, you know, as the backdrop of another story. So with me, it's more about putting other cultures into it and, you know, taking license. And I don't make it perfectly like that, like the culture, but I definitely bring in some different elements from different cultures, which includes their mythology and you know, different things. And sometimes I make it up. I mean, I make up different parts of the details, but you definitely have that flavor of, well, this is more Middle Eastern, this is more, you know, African, this is more Asian, East Asian, and, you know, all that sort of stuff that I like to kind of put in there.
And magic. So you talk about magic. Do you take existing systems or thoughts of how people present magic, how it's been done in other books and stories and stuff in the past, or have you developed your own?
So I mean, I have developed my own. And I'm still developing, you know, that's something that's going to happen in this next book that I write. And I'll explore a different magic system within this book too. But no, so my magic system in general, and this is a lot of people now, Brandon Sanderson really changed the game. If, you know, people know who he is in fantasy because he's, you know, he broke the internet when he did the GoFundMe during COVID or right after COVID. And he's just this huge name in fantasy. And one of the reasons why he's so popular is he kind of changed the game with magic systems. You know, you go into Lord of the Rings and some of these other older fantasies, magic was something that just happened. Like Gandalf could just do stuff, and then he couldn't do stuff, and then he was there and he wasn't there. Like there wasn't a lot of rules to it. And because of, you know, sort of the age of science and a lot of the other stuff that's happened, and science fiction and some of that influence, Brandon Sanderson was one of the first ones to really have rules, like a magic system that really had rules and costs and this is what it could do and limits and what it couldn't do and all of this stuff. And so it's definitely influenced by that, but it's also my magic system is influenced by those sort of principles, but also influenced by, you know, stuff like The Last Airbender, Avatar, people know about that. I mean, it's kind of a, you know, a conglomeration, a lot of those different things. But that's kind of where my magic system comes from. You know, this is about the manipulation of different, you know, forces of the earth, you know, like the water and the air and those stuff, fire and that sort of thing. But you know, with a little bit of more of a twist of how that can be an abuse and people use it for power and that sort of thing. So
I get my magic from Bewitched.
do you wiggle your nose a lot?
Yeah, I do. I can wiggle my nose and then things appear and then Dora comes down and yells at me.
Dora the Explorer, or like you, that's no. Your wife's name?
No, that, oh God, wife, no.
No,
it's the mother of Bewitched.
Mother, that's right, that was her name. Yeah. That was her name.
It was the, you know, and she'd always get, well, I just show my age, you know, stuff like that.
Oh, no, I watched it.
Yeah, well, I guess, yeah.
Syndication, I mean, I didn't watch it in the original.
Well, I was going to say,
I definitely watched it. No, I didn't.
Because I was just a little kid when it was first showing. So, listen, so when you talk about a lot of this book, the story and the fantasy and the darkness and the science fiction part and the fantasy, all that stuff, to me it seems like you still have a happy ending. There's you're aiming at a fantasy that is hopeful. That is something that has good ending. Is that correct, or is this? Am I reading it wrong?
Yeah, you can. To me, it's not about. I don't necessarily aim. I don't aim at a happy ending. I don't aim there. I aim at an ending that makes sense and satisfies the reader. So, in other words. When you get to the end of one of my books, I want you to say two things. I want you to say that was an amazing book and you feel like I completed a story, and whether it's sad or happy, it'll probably have a little bit of both. To me, there's going to be, you know, victory to some degree, but there'll also be tragedy and there'll also be cost to things. And definitely with some of the darkness involved, there's people die and, you know, but you also get the comeuppance of the villain. So there's some of that satisfaction. But I also want people to say, I want more. You know, to me, it's a very fine line and it's very difficult to do. So it's a challenge for me. And I think I've done it with this first book because I definitely have people who tell me that. They've read it and they say, that was an amazing book. One of my favorites that you've written. When's the second one coming out? Like they're ready for it to continue. So for me, that's what I try to do. When I come to the end of a book, I want people to be satisfied with it in a way that this is the end of that story and it makes sense and we feel good about it. But you know, people could have died, people, and they generally do. Of course, the main character in this one, it's told from first person, so she's not the one who dies, right? But I also want people to be so invested in the story, they want to know what happens next. That's the whole, that's the definition of a page turner, is you're turning the pages because you just, you can't, you just keep wanting to know what happens next. So that's what I do.
So you're teased. You make people think they're getting a happy ending at the book, but they don't, you know, so they have to keep buying it in search of the happy ending, is what you call the series.
Well, for me, maybe because I'm older now, especially, but in my life, and I don't know about for you, you know, but I would say for most people, when you get a little older, you realize things don't wrap up that easily, that you might have had a vision or an expectation of a happy ending, but the ending that actually happens is sometimes very different than what you expected, and sometimes better than what you expected, or just different. Or so those are the sort of things that I definitely put into this book. You know, she's young, right? Because it's a, you know, for younger audiences, so she has a certain expectation of how life should go, and yet she gets kind of disillusioned along the way. And the heart of this story is how do you remain a hero? How do you still fight for what's right when governments are corrupt, when people don't react the way that they should, when religion abuses people? Like, how do you still act and maintain that sort of fighting for what's good and right while there are these other forces at play? And it's sort of a complex thing, but so that's for me, you know, like, so yes, it's a tease, but it's also, that's the way my life has been, you know.
Book about drinking. Okay.
Well, like I said before we started, I didn't have enough bourbon for the, you know. There is a whiskey called Writer's Tears. I don't know if you've seen that. Oh, I love that. It's actually really good. It's a good whiskey.
I have to try it. Well, how do you keep track of the continuity in your series? Do you have tools? Do you have a system? What's your process?
That is a great question, because that's very, very difficult. This past year, I broke down and read through the first trilogy and made notes, and now I have a glossary. Because I'm like, this is getting too big. This is getting way bigger than me, and it's so funny because, you know, fans, other writers have experienced this. Fans will, that's not what you called him, and that's not the kind of thing he would say, you know, for book one, and you're like, I don't remember, so I've broken down and made more of a glossary, and I would have notes and notebooks that I would have these sort of ideas in, and definitions and names of places and things, but I finally kind of put it all in one place. Like, here's where it's got to go. As I get into, like, this is a separate series in a kind of a different time than the original one, I want to make sure there's continuity, like you're saying. I want to make sure that there's, I don't know, but Easter eggs is the right term, that there's some sort of Easter eggs where if people have read the original trilogy, they'll go, he's mentioning this part of history or this part of thing that, you know, that is connecting to other parts of it. So, yeah. So, no, I've had to be a little bit more organized. I'm not as naturally organized. I've become that way as out of survival, mostly.
Right. Yeah, because your wife has written you that way.
She might have been her expectation that would be fun that I was that way, but I think the reality of me being disorganized is not something she likes.
No, it's, you better watch it. You'll be killed off in the next book. So, you know, but when you do a series and you're starting this out, okay?
Yeah.
So you have this idea and you have the world you build and you've got characters and stuff like this. Do you kind of know how long this series is going to go? Do you have this kind of forethought, like it's going to be 8 books and it's going to be, you're going to start here and you're going to end here and have fun along the way. Like, do you kind of, yes, kind of have it outlined in your brain, the whole map, and then you put it together?
I have a very rough idea of the plan. Yes. I'm one of those, I don't have a detailed plan, but I definitely have a general arc of where I'm going, you know, because my problem with some, and I think a lot of people, they get disappointed with a book two or a book three, is because the writer sometimes doesn't know where to take the characters next, if that makes sense. They don't know.
Yeah.
The first book, they wrote it and it's good, and it's like, oh, now we got to do something. Now we want a book two, or we're doing a book two. So for me, I want to make sure, you know, like in the original trilogy that I wrote, you know, over the years, I had three books planned, not fully, but I had three books. Okay, this is going to happen in the first book. This is going to be this thing's going to be revealed in the next book. And I had benchmarks for the three books. And yes, and like you said it perfectly. And then I just have fun along the way. And then I just kind of fill in with the story as I go. And for this one, I've got four books, definitely. These are shorter, a little shorter than my sort of former epic, a little more epic, not super, not like 1,000 pages, but a little more epic novels. So these are a little more, these are shorter. And so I've got four books sort of planned. And my publishers, you know, we're already talking about, you know, when the second one's going to come out and all that sort of stuff. So,
well, that's good. Yeah. So what is this whole thing done for you? Like when you're writing this book and you've got book one out now and you got the others on the way, when you look back at it from before you started it compared to now, how do you think this whole experience has changed you in writing this series and starting it?
Yeah, that's a great question. For me, this every one of my books has this element to it. I try to challenge myself to do something new in every book that I write. I try to challenge myself to do something new, to try something new, whether it's a structure thing, whether it's a point of view thing, whether, you know, whatever it might be, to kind of keep it fresh for myself, but also to grow. And so for me, for this book, it was a very conscious choice of, you know, my original trilogy was more for adults, and like, you know, like I said, the violence and the darkness and all that stuff was more geared towards adults, and it wasn't probably sexually graphic enough for it, you know, for it wasn't so spicy. That's the literary term for, you know, young people, as you know, teenagers not to like it, but it did have some fairly sort of intense moments. Violence and darkness and stuff. But for this one, I wanted to just challenge myself. Okay, I want to write something new. I want to start a new series. I want to write about a different culture where the main character isn't a white character sort of thing. You know, I want to, and it's first person, and it's a female, and she's going through this in this world of, where, you know, it's kind of from a different culture. And so a lot of those things were challenges to me, and I didn't know if I was going to be good at it. I don't know if that makes sense. Like, you know, I try really hard, and I was like, I wanted to do something new. And so for me, like, my ability to do that and for it to be received well, you know, some of my imposter syndrome has been, you know, sort of messed with, because it's gotten some really good reviews in the industry, very, very, very positive things. Won an award and things like that, because I know my mom's going to like it and I know that's going to happen. But as far as whether people who don't know me are going to respond very positively to it, you just never know. And so for me, it's helped me to again see, you know, I to keep pushing and growing and trying new things and branching out into some different things rather than just kind of staying in the same wheelhouse, if that makes sense.
Right. Well, if you sleep with a lot of people will give it good reviews. Just saying. It works for me. But
it depends. It depends.
That's true. Yeah, if you're wearing
depends
the pants,
how good you are.
Like that. Yeah.
It depends how. Yeah. Depends on. Depends I mean, on, if you're.
Well,
you could. You know, it could be. You know, I'll write you a good review if I never have to sleep with you again. Maybe that. Maybe that. Maybe that.
Yeah, you just never know. Just. Well, listen. How do you write a female in first person? Like, how do you get into that character? How does it happen? Do you dress up like a woman and sit down at the typewriter? Like, where does it come from for you?
Yeah, there's a wig. I've got a wig. And
well, you never know. I mean, that's...
No, yes. Yeah. No, so for me, it's I think there's something very powerful about being a writer. And it's one of the reasons why I believe stories... Our great stories are so important is because a great story will invite you to look at the world through someone else's eyes, if that makes sense, and someone who's not you. And I think that's that sort of complexity helps people to, or at least it should, in theory. But I think it does. I think it helps people to do that in real life. And to try to understand each other more. So for me, it's an issue of that I have great relationships, and I've had great relationships with women. You know, some of my best friends in high school were other young women, and we were just really good friends, and we would talk a lot, and I would ask questions, and so for me, it was about understanding people. From different walks of life, from how they think, why they think that way, you know, and when you start to understand that a little bit, I'm not going to be exactly maybe, you know, but when you put yourself in other people's shoes and you try to see things from their perspective as a writer, so that's something that kind of expands your brain a little bit. So for me, you know, I've been married to my wife for 23 and a half years. We've been married for 23 and a half years, and we have three kids, and I have two daughters, and both of my daughters are very different people from me and each other and my wife. And so when you love somebody and you want to try to do what's good for them, you have to try to understand them and how they think and why they think that way. And so for me, that's just, I think it's allowed me to get into that sort of space. And I've always been attracted to very strong women, if that makes sense. Not, you know, bullies, but, you know, people who are very confident in themselves. And those are the kind of women that I write. You know, when I write about women, those are kind of women that I write about, because those are the people that I've spent a lot of time with. And so I just kind of put myself in that place. And it is weird. It's a little crazy. Yeah. You know, you said it before. It's a little crazy. But at the same time, I do think that it's healthy to do that just in life. And I think that's what good writing does. Good writing says, because it makes you relate to that character. Fortunately, I've had, like I said, I've had other women, writer friends of mine who have, you know, that I mentor and other people, and they've commented very positively. They're like, I love her character. I love her. She's so awesome. You know, I'm like, good. I'm glad.
Do you remember the original Psycho movie in the 60s?
I absolutely remember.
Well, do you remember?
It's a genius movie.
Yeah, but you remember his, you know, he dressed up like his mother, you know, the wig.
Yeah.
That's it.
No, I don't have the hat. I don't have the hat to go with it.
That's what Dave does. He dresses up like that and then he writes. And
Al makes me, though.
And it works.
He just never, you know, he never mentions that.
Well, like, when you say makes you, like, is it gunpoint? Is it
a whip?
Yeah.
Is it, yeah. I mean, you're in Canada, so you might not have a gun, but, I mean, you know, it's like, oh, you know.
We just tell Americans that. We have several.
Oh, okay.
That's just, we're waiting for
is
the
it, is it like mind control? Like, now we're getting into fantasy, you know, like mind control?
That's the whole thing. It's all a fantasy. Yeah. Nothing ever exists. Well, listen, so in this book, in this series, underneath the action the entertainment.
That's awesome.
And all that stuff. What do you have a subtext? Is there a meaning?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. For me, this is just me personally. I think the most entertaining story is one that has meaning, is one that communicates some type of meaning and helps us relate to that character. Some people like gimmicks, you know, they just, you know, you watch a movie and it's just, it is what it is. For me, whether it's horror or whether it's a scary movie, whether it's a romance, whether it's a buddy cop movie, for me, the movies that stay with me, the books that stay with me that I want to come back to are those that say something. And maybe I take it my own way, like everybody does, but they say something. And so for me, absolutely, like I said before, you know, when I was writing this particular book, you know, I was like, well, what do I want to, I wanted to know the heart of it. And the heart of it was I wanted to take her on this journey of sort of disillusionment, because I think a lot of young people, I dealt with it. I don't know if, you know, I think most people, young people do, right? You realize your parents aren't the smartest people in the world. And in fact, you might think, well, I didn't know they were this stupid. Or, you know, you get to these moments where you're growing up, but then you also get to the point where you realize, oh, well, maybe they weren't as stupid as I thought they were. And just sort of taking her through that sort of disillusionment and coming to find herself, and staying true to what she believed, even in the midst of sort of a lot of division in her world and corruption. I think we live in that sort of world right now, where a lot of people can get really disillusioned about, again, I live in America, and I, you know, don't want to get too political. I don't want to get too political, but I see a lot of people very frustrated. They don't like either choice for president, let's say. And so that can become very disillusioning and can be very disheartening. But for me, it's like, but shouldn't we also find a way to live in a way that's heroic, that's for others, that's for good in our own context, and and it's just sort of struggling through that question. So for me, that was the question coming into it. And I took her on that journey. And that's what those are the kind of things I try to find when I'm writing a book. And that's the main thing I'm trying to make sure I have before I write book two. I want to have a different question. I want to take her on a different journey. And I want to take her because I want the reader to ask those questions of themselves. What would I do faced with this sort of disillusionment and of a father figure and secrets that change things? And I think we've all had those sort of experiences. And so that to me is entertainment. That's what makes it entertaining, is that you wrestle with these things and come to some sort of conclusion. And it may not be you have all the answers, but it definitely you feel like you wrestled with something important. And for me, those are the good movies, whether it's, like I said, whether it's a romance, whether it's a cheesy comedy, no matter what it is, those are the ones that I like to, you know, kind of come back to.
When we're talking here, how do people find you? How do you like to be found? Do you give your social media, your website?
So you can go to my website. It's fairly basic, but it's www.mbmooney.com. I'm also on TikTok and Facebook and Instagram with some version of MB Mooney. But you can just also, if you want to look for the book, you can go on pretty much Amazon or wherever books are sold. It's right now it's on ebook and it's on hardcover. Also, I've got a hardcover copy right now. It's on, the publisher really wanted to start with that. And we're looking at doing an audiobook. Let's see if that happens soon. I would like for it to, but I can't read it because, you know, I might be able to wear the wig, but I can't do the voice.
Oh, come on.
So, so my website, mbmooney.com, or, you know, Instagram and TikTok Instagram and TikTok are my two main ones that I try to post some stuff on.
Yeah, you like showing off. Now, your book is called Shield of the King. And it's book one, and the author, M.B. Mooney. So thank you for being here.
Thanks, guys. This was really fun. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Brett.
This has been a production of the House of Mystery Radio Show. To find out more about our show, guests, or hosts, go to our website at houseofmysteryradio.com.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.